Welcome to Your Health Reset, where we address the real root causes behind health issues today to get you rapid results on your health journey so you can be who you came here to be, mind, body, and spirit. I'm your host, Sinclair Keneally, survivor of complex chronic illness, expert on resolving root causes, and co-founder of Detox Rejuvenation and Meditation RX. Let's get started. Welcome back. I'm your host, Sinclair Keneally, and we are continuing our conversation on root causes and the rapid results that become possible once we finally address those root causes. Today, I'm joined by the wonderful Carrie Rivera, who is really a luminary in the natural health world and has really forged a path for those of us that are concerned about autism and want very much to take a natural approach and see lasting progress. So welcome, Carrie. It's a joy to have you here.
I'm so excited to be with you, Sinclair. Thank you for the invitation.
Good. Excellent. Let's dive right in. I just want to lay out the groundwork first about what are the factors when it comes to creating the condition known as autism. And then we can talk about solutions and natural health approaches.
The good news is that there are solutions and there is hope, because once you know where it's coming from, you got a pretty good chance of being able to fix it. And like my dear late great friend, Dr. Roby Mitchell said, if you're not born with it, you don't have to die with it. I believe he's absolutely right. And our children, like 99.9% of the children that get the label autism, I believe they're vaccine injured. I believe there are some that maybe like in utero, mom got a Rogam shot or flu vaccine or these kind of things. So some of the kids actually got it while they were in their mother's body and they came out not right. If you start to study behind the scenes of what's going on and you question the moms, almost every mother will tell you their child was born typical and they had a period of time, whether it's 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, 24 months, where they're developing typically for any child. And then they start to lose things that they had, speech, eye contact, ability to share these kind of things. And then, of course, the crying and the sleepless nights and these kind of things start. So something happened to them. They weren't born like that. They changed and they went away. But they basically, there's just the shell. So we know 99.5%, 9%, I don't know what the number is, but they're usually vaccine injured. And it's just the label of autism is really, this year I decided I really want to come out and say, I think it's actually not right. Our children should be labeled vaccine injured and that there should be some compensation. But of course, it's the perfect crime. And of course, you don't want to be actually, if you're causing it, well, you'll be cited for it and you have to pay all that money. I think it was Reagan, I'm sure it was Reagan, that actually signed the exemption for any of the pharmaceutical companies to be held liable for any damage related to vaccines, because there are vaccine courts. And of course, very few people are ever able to be seen in them, because most of us, we fell into the time after vaccines were given immunity.
And that was 1986, right?
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. And over $4 billion in damages have been awarded to people who have actually gone through the vaccine court since then.
How many of us really should be? How many trillions would it really be? Because to raise a child with autism, and of course, to raise that child well, you have to have support. But to be sitting here with you, for example, takes support. To be getting through with your day takes support. All these things cost money. It's real. And our kids also, a lot of the children that don't recover, they and people that are not getting actual treatment that is appropriate for recovering and healing the gut and the brain and the inflammation, these kind of things. These people go on to need major care or institutional type things. Yeah, it's just mammoth what they actually end up needing. So that's why when we talk about hope and help, it's exciting that I have created a protocol, and I believe it to be a blessing because I didn't just happen to be so smart. I actually just got blessed with the use of chlorine dioxide for. And then actually what ended up happening, my own child was diagnosed autism at 3.5. He was born typically, he had a very typical development. And then he started to lose his speech and lose his eye contact and things started going. And then when I didn't know what was happening, everybody was giving me the wrong diagnosis. They're like, oh, he's just spoiled. Oh, he this kind of stuff. And then finally, a brave tourist one day said to me, she was a psychologist. She was like, oh, yeah, I think he has autism. But that sent me looking for something. That sent me looking for answers. And then I started to realize, because you forget what happened. And so after going to see every major name in the United States of doctors who are experts in autism and spending maybe somewhere between $500 and $700,000, we lose track after a while. But, and my son was better. There was no question he was better, but how much better was he compared to the dollar amount? Not really there. So one day I really saw that. I even opened a clinic. I was helping other people, doctors there and psychologists and everything. And one day I just really felt like this wasn't the answer. I'm leading people down the wrong way. And I laid on my kid's bed. They were at school. And I just prayed with my hands open. And I said, okay, maybe I've been praying to the wrong name. So I just started naming everybody that everybody prays to, all the right ones like Buddha and God. Allah. Anyways, anything that I know that it's good, I said, okay, this is it. And I started to remember this stuff that I bought a year prior. And I just bought it. It was cheap. And it was at this doctor's office. And I lived in Mexico at the time. And there was doctors sell chlorine dioxide in Mexico. Not every doctor, but there's a lot of traditional doctors, allopathic doctors, and they do alternative treatments as well. It's really common. Latin America, it's pretty common. And so I'm like, oh, one of those bottles. And it's some detoxification. I have to take some of those. And they were cheap. So I bought a few sets. And then I didn't think about them anymore because I went on to do another protocol that was like, I don't know, $4,000 a month and testing and everything. So I did another 9 months. My kid did terrible. And then I'm like, those drops. So I started with the drops and I said, okay, look, they work. But then I went to the internet. This is 2010. And I look on the internet about how it works for autism, nothing at all. I said, okay, virus, bacteria, parasites, candida, heavy metals, inflammation, oxidative stress. Yes, gets rid of it, takes care of it. I'm like, okay. And then my ex-husband and I, at the time we were still married, and he just didn't want to hear about any treatment. Like we had gone through everything. I had done everything, stem cells, you name it, I did it. And my son was better, but it was like still a marginal improvement compared to what the desired results were. And of course, what the results that had been promised were. So I start these drops. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm texting, I'm emailing. It's 2010. I'm emailing to Mark Brennan and Jim Humble, who wrote the book on chlorine dioxide. And he had partnered up with Mark Brennan. They were doing training seminars. So I kept sending emails. I'm like, I'm this woman. I got this clinic to help these families. I don't know what to do. And then I get this email from Mark saying, I'll have Jim emailing you. And so this is like day one, day two, day three. So I'm giving Patrick one drop in the morning, one drop at night. And this is after my ex and I took the drops ourselves and decided we didn't die. That was our criteria. We didn't die, so Patrick would be okay. And then I get an email back from Jim, and he's okay. One drop, 8 times a day for 25 pounds. Two drops, 8 times a day for 50 pounds. And for a 100-pound person, they take 3 drops, 8 times a day. And my son had just turned 10, and he was exactly 100 pounds. So we're like, okay, 3 drops. So by the afternoon, he projectile vomited. We said, okay, that's enough. Detoxification protocols, if you go too fast, you don't know how to use them. That can happen with anything. That can happen with an antifungal. Later on that evening, he was jumping, flapping in front of his touchscreen computer, looking at YouTube videos. And I think I was either watching Caesar Milan with the dogs or I was reading a book. I forget what it was. But he turns to me at 9 o'clock at night and he says, I want bed. And I'm like, okay, I'm by myself. I didn't just hear that. I'm like, he didn't say that before. I said, okay. And then I just stood there.
Was that the time?
He would like, no, not, especially not about things like that. Like he could say one, I want chicken, I want go walk, I want shoes, I want car, but nothing like the mundane. And also he's a child that if you never told him it was time to go to bed, he'd be up all night. Like we'd party. He'd be standing there like jumping, flapping in front of his YouTube channel until we were ready to go to bed. We'd put him in bed when we went to bed. He just didn't have that off switch.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay. And then I followed him up the stairs to his room. When he got there, he looked me like straight in the eyes and he said, I want to take baths. And then I was like, okay, I just heard that. I did actually hear that. Cause I used to be like, take a bath. I used to be like the cheerleader for everything that we had to do that was mundane. And then he was in the tub, like exfoliating with his little loofah pad and really happy, but not that yeasty, crazy, manacle stuff. It was like just really enjoying the water and the soap and everything. And after that, I toweled him off and his eyes met my eyes like magnets. And he said, I want brushed teeth. I want blanket. He wanted to play with me in the blankets. This was like my first full dose day on chlorine dioxide. And then I'm going to my clinic and people are like, what are you doing with Patrick? He's better. What are you doing? When that sort of started the ball rolling, August of 2010, or here we are, August 2010, started the ball rolling. And ever since then, it was like email one after the other. People were like sending me messages from all over the world. Oh, we want to know about this. And then, of course, social media started. And then there were like 60,000 people on social media. And of course, in the first 4 or 5 months of the chlorine dioxide and me helping people, I didn't really know what I was doing. I just kind of had that sort of vague. And I just knew how to break things up into smaller, lower doses and to work ourselves up. We had in the first 6 months, 40 recoveries. So at that point, I said, I have to go meet this Jim Hummel in the Dominican Republic and give him a hug and say thank you. And I did. And then I became friends. And then he ended up moving to Mexico, where I lived with my ex-husband at the time. But that was really how the whole movement started. And then in 2016 is when the troll attack started and life got really difficult. But like I was saying too, it's not organic. It's not, oh, somebody got harmed and wow, this is really bad. No, it's the opposite. There's like now thousands and thousands of children who have lost the autism diagnosis while doing the chlorine dioxide protocol, and tens of thousands of kids like my son better and living a higher quality of life than they would have ever been living. So even if you don't make the full recovery, which means they look like every other child on the playground in the typical play lots, they look just like those other kids that are in the school, they're mainstream. Two of my kids this past month in August, both the two of my recovered kids got driver's licenses. Two of them, like they're 16 now, they're recovered. They recovered when they were 6, 7, 9, I don't know, younger. But autism is avoidable, treatable, and that C word that we're not allowed to use that really means recoverable. So it's definitely something to look into.
It's so interesting because I know so many parents who are still searching for the answers or who are accepting marginal improvements. And they're being told that this is as good as it gets, while all the projections about autism is going to keep increasing.
They say our children are non-responders, which makes my skin crawl. Our children are all responders. If you understand what's wrong with them and you get to the root problem, like getting rid of the pathogens, which reduces the inflammation, the oxidative stress in the body. So they talk about terrain or you got to get the path. They're just boiling inside of them. They're brewing. They're multiplying, dividing. Bacteria doubles every 2 hours, according to Mike Adams in the lab. So for me, that's like this big red flag. So the kids have the PANS, which causes these terrible behaviors. So it's not like they want to hit themselves. It's because they have PANS, or the S is strep, what it is. It's a bacteria streptococcal infection. And right. If you can get rid of that, which we can, guess what? All those behaviors go away. Your house has been saved. Your child's head has been saved. Life like changes so much. So there's every aspect of the autism spectrum is made better with this protocol.
So let's do a little bit of myth busting then. You mentioned people see autism as non-recoverable or that the autistic kids are non-responders. What other myths still persist that to be untrue based on your work in your clinics?
Chlorine dioxide is a bleach. It is not. Chlorine dioxide is not bleach. So it's a pro-oxidant. It kills through oxidation. Bleach kills through chlorination. And they're also very different names. Chlorine dioxide and bleach is sodium hypochlorite. So they're totally different chemicals. And when you start to understand, even salt sounds deadly. So I think that once we really understand that chemicals are also so very different among themselves, that it's very easy to be misled. And about 2-3 years ago, this wonderful man, he created a documentary called The Universal Antidote. And it's at theuniversalantidote.com. And this is a documentary about chlorine dioxide, not about Cary Rivera, not about Jim Hummel. It's about chlorine dioxide. And they talk a little bit about a couple of the people who had discovered it early on. But it literally says that NASA, for example, in 1978, I think it was, they coined the term universal antidote for chlorine dioxide because it basically killed everything. And I believe why they've gone after all of us truth tellers in the chlorine dioxide movement so very hard in the last 2 years is due to the fact that pretty much everything that they have, they hit us with their bioweapons, chlorine dioxide can destroy.
Okay, so this is really important to understand because we as well in our practice and use oxidative therapies and we use antioxidant therapies. Mm. And that you have to be mindful about keeping them separate so they don't negate each other. But there's many oxidative therapies like ozone. Ozone has taken the biohacking world and now the chronic illness world by storm. Right. So that's a wonderful example of oxidative therapies. What else do we need to best about autism? And what is possible for our children?
You're not born with autism. You don't have to die with autism. And once somebody is nonverbal, doesn't mean they're nonverbal forever. And once they have autism, doesn't mean they have it forever. But you have to start working with them. You have to start to understand that it is avoidable, treatable, and recoverable. And there's a lot of ways to do it. So I'm not the only person in the world that has recovered a child from autism. But there aren't many people who know how to do it because they misunderstand or in some of the cases, like some of the doctors who I knew in the States when I was recovering my son, trying to recover my son with them, I think they mean well. And I think some of them have more than good intentions. I think they're on the right track. So there are a few doctors here and there that will get lucky once in a while. But I also don't see those recovered kids coming off the diet. So they end up gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free, chemical-free, color. They end up free of so many different things, grain-free, fruit-free, whatever. And a lot of them really can't lead that way because they haven't actually healed the gut. But once you heal and seal the gut, you can eat anything you want. So my kids that are recovered, they eat whatever they want. All the parents are responsible. Both of the moms are. The two, I'm just thinking the two right now with, because there's thousands, but I'm thinking of two right now. They just sent me the driver's license. Both of them are moms that are fit and active and this kind of stuff. I'm sure they're not being like, yeah, let's order a pizza and some colas. Like, I'm sure they're not doing that. But I do know that those kids do. Like, I saw one of them, he just had his 16th birthday a couple months prior to the driver's license. And she sent me, it was a surprise 16th birthday. He's like, oh, no way. Like, he came into the party and all the friends were like running to him. And it was a 16-year-old party. And it was really beautiful at a hotel or something. And I'm sure they weren't like, oh, he's going to have the gluten-free tonight. And no, he's done. He's recovered. He can eat whatever he wants.
Wow. That's amazing. And then it's going to give parents a lot of hope.
Sure, it's so much hope. It's a lot of work. I mean, some people will tell me, oh, but it's so hard. Hard is a relative term. Hard is living with 35 or 40-year-old with autism and you're going to die because you can't live forever. That's hard. How do you say goodbye? I didn't, you're in diapers. How do I say goodbye? You can't because you're still taking care of that. And I've seen parents where they have older kids and they're older themselves and they can't. You know, and there's diapers and there's stuff like this because there's some people that they never got any help early on. And so they continued into their 20s and now into the 30s. And they're is looking pretty grim because you have to have somebody to administer protocol, to do the work. So that's where I just wish that the world was in such a different situation and we could have like hospitals dedicated because they could be really lovely places where the parent actually helps. But there's, okay, here's the plan for today. Take your things. Here's your drops. Get going. And everything's happening. There's the enema colonic room. There's the hyperbaric, like all that stuff would be like in one wonderful institution. And then once you get it down and the kids are better, you move on. Like you can actually graduate to going home and then doing a lot of other things at home, but that you've already established that you know how to do it. And it's a dream for me. And of course, I see some families, like their kids are recoverable if they can't get it. Really difficult. A lot of people have post-traumatic stress disorder from it. The marriage, every time a good day is difficult. So what happens when you have a special needs kid and you're not sleeping anymore? He's up all night. You're like, every time you hear that mirror, like my husband would tell me things like, he doesn't see no problem. He would say to me, like, I work. He would say to me, like, he works and I don't work. So I have to stay up all night, every night while the child is away, screaming, crying and TV and diaper changes and stuff like this. These kind of things, it's very difficult. And then I have a mom that I had a consultation with this week as a mother, father, and a 4-year-old child who's already hitting himself. And mom is working from home, like many of us do work from home. But when you work from home, it doesn't mean that you can watch children and answer the door when Amazon comes. You're working from home. You're in consultation. You cannot do that. And she's doing conferences and things like this. And the child is there. There is no support. And if you dump your kid into a daycare setting, they're going to feed them whatever they want. They're going to do whatever they believe is acceptable. And that's not going to be okay with you. It's a very difficult situation. And the stress of the whole situation, maritally speaking, is very difficult just by that. So I think sometimes when you save and recover and heal a child, whether they recover fully or they just, you know, a full recovery is always ideal. But even if you fall short of it, the whole family, so grandparents, everybody's affected. So if you can just make everybody's life better, you've saved a family.
Yeah, not just a child. Yeah, it's amazing.
Exactly. It's very exciting. And there's so many stories. I just think of like recent things because I do stay in touch with some of my families. A lot of them go on. The kids recover, they go on. You never hear from them again. And that's okay. I would have gone back to the tennis court. Kids would have gone back to their nice private school and life would have gone on, but it didn't go like that. But that God always knows what he's doing and how this should work. Cause I think I would have, I know I would have been out of here. It's really, it's difficult. And it's difficult because I care. If you don't care, it's not difficult. But when you do care, and I take a lot of pride in what I do, that's why if anybody ever says, oh, the protocol's not working, say, what are you doing? Tell me. And I start to write it. I've got gaping holes here. You're not doing it right. Like today, somebody's like, oh, it's like this. I'm like, okay, so 16 doses. He doesn't always want to take it. Like he didn't want to take that vaccine, that one that you held him down and strapped him down. At first, sometimes they don't always want to do something or take something. I remember my oldest son, who's
typical.
I remember when he was a little kid, he just wouldn't take the antibiotics. Whatever the doctor would make him take, he's probably smart. But anyway, so he wouldn't take it. It wasn't really impossible. So that's get the husband involved. And anyway, it was really a rough thing. Eventually, they take whatever they have to take because they know that they're going to be better for it. Of course, I don't push antibiotics. I'm just talking about, I can remember so many years ago when that was the situation before when I was relying on the pediatricians and the like.
But yeah.
Still, your children, it's kind of like with diet. Like when people tell me, oh, but he really likes Coca-Cola or he really likes pizza or he only eats pasta. Okay. Do you have any money to make? Does he have a job? He goes to the store. He can talk that well that he can actually check out at the cash register. Oh, he can't. Okay, then he's not getting it. It's very simple. I did it. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of us have done it. And of course, all of our kids are picky eaters. So he's really a picky eater. Yeah, that's part of the autism thing. They're real picky. They're real picky about everything because they feel bad. When you feel bad, you got a headache. You're like, everything's going to make you mad. Then them too, their tummy hurts. They have a headache. They feel terrible. They probably haven't slept in weeks, most of them. They barely sleep. They're always not feeling well. So it's very difficult to deal with them. But at the same time, if they eat anything, like with my son's, actually, I did an interview with somebody because he had to, you know, that potato diet. It wasn't really a potato diet, but he only ate the only gluten-free, casein-free food that he ate was potatoes. Everything else had gluten or casein, or it was like really full of all kinds of coloring and flavoring and stuff like that. So he ate potatoes fried in coconut oil with sea salt for about 3 weeks without trying any other food. Like he put the chicken near it and he just did. So we went like that. And then eventually started eating the chicken, eventually a little cantaloupe. And we opened it. Now, of course, he eats everything. But on day three of potato diet, he said three words. Like he had lost all his speech. He had probably 100 words while he was 12 months, 13, 14 months. Then he started to lose it. And then by 2.5, he was totally nonverbal. And then as soon as I started the gluten, somebody said, oh, I have this book. It's about gluten-free diet for kids with ADHD and autism. I'm like, can you lend it? And I like devoured the book one night. I'm like, okay, we only eat potatoes. Of all the lists of stuff that he could have, he eats potatoes, but they were included. And really, he started to talk again on this potato diet. It wasn't a potato diet. And then we just tried logically adding in some chicken, you boil it and you shred it and you put a lot of salt on it. And eventually he's tried it with fries. He said, okay, chicken fries. And it went like that. But they were, of course, potatoes. We cut it all and made it with it. And people were like, yeah, but that's a really bad diet. But it's a place to start. It's about a lot better than those barbecue flavored Ruffles or whatever the thing is that he was eating prior. Of course, because they become to the point where they self-select to the biggest garbage. And of course, they're crying so much. You're like, just take it. Here, have it. Like anything just to make crying stop.
I think this is a really important distinction. And only somebody who's been through it can say this with such authority, because it is so difficult. You've also mentioned in the past glutamate as well. Can you speak to that a bit?
I absolutely can. A very overlooked work by Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's a neurosurgeon who's retired. I think he's in his late 70s, maybe early 80s. I've been trying to get a hold of him to do an interview. If you know him, let me know. But anyways, he wrote many books, and one of them was written in 1995 called Excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills. And it's about glutamate. I bought the book. I didn't study. I'm like, oh yeah, gluten, oh yeah, casein, which are the proteins in wheat and dairy. And I overlooked the fact that you can have free glutamate in tomatoes and spinach and broccoli and bananas and citrus fruits. So when you go into the autism spectrum, what do these kids jones for? Like they could eat bananas by the bunch. No problem. They love their oranges, their orange juice. I love tomato sauce. When you look at what these kids eat, it's all high glutamate foods. So it doesn't even have to be like Chinese takeout with MSG. It can literally be the glutamate that is naturally occurring in the food. So last year, when I had a little bit of a break in the action after a raid SWAT on my house, I started to look at some of the books and I really started to think a little bit more about some of the stuff and where I was missing. Because also I was doing a lot of ketogenic diet with kids. But remember, ketogenic has a lot of like almonds. Almonds are very high in glutamate. It's the only nut that's high in glutamate. So you can have coconut and pistachios and macadamia, no problem. But that is really high in glutamate. So, of course, a lot of people went into a high almond diet when they go into keto. So making bread, right, and cakes and muffins. And that's not the idea. And I slowed it down. I took it back. I thought about it more, read Dr. Blaylock's book again, and really caught it then. And then I started to look on the internet and looking for foods that are high in glutamate. Extremely, one site says no, one site says yes. So you have to pick and choose and do a little bit more searching around. Anyway, I was able to come up with a list of foods. And it does seem to be the case. The kids are almost always addicted to the food that makes their brain like goofy, kind of like having a couple glasses of wine, I would imagine. They just get a little bit dizzy and then they're fine. But they really love those foods because they make them feel a different way. So came up with a list of foods and I usually start the parents there. I've also gone into carnivore, by the way, really into carnivore. Like it's actually on my desk all the time. Dr. Sean Baker wrote a book, Carnivore Diet, and he's been carnivore 6 years. The guy, like, he walks the walks. He's like, buff, he's my age. And anyway, so there was a group of moms in Chile, and they decided they wanted to start a group about carnivore because one of the moms had been doing it for several months prior, and her daughter was like fully recovered, missing a couple pieces. So anyway, she would be kind of leader of the group. So there was like 46 of these moms in January. So made a group, talked about how it's going to go, and we started. And they just supported each other. And in the first 4 months, January to May, 3 kids recover. So that means they would not be, you know, eligible for the label of autism. And there was one boy, I've been working with this boy for about maybe 8 months prior, 9-year-old fella who was self-injurious. He had the pandas, the strep piece. He was pretty difficult. And if he didn't like something his mom was doing, he'd go attack her. His ATEC score, which is an autism treatment evaluation checklist at autism.org. It's a free test. You can take it every day or every 3 months. I think every 3 months is appropriate because of the way that people are changing. So anyway, the ATEC score, 0 to 10 ATEC would be considered recovered. 0 is perfect. Like we're always going to 0. But under 10, there's not, you don't have autism. Maybe a little A and B, maybe a little, we have some speech to work out. Like they're talking, but it's maybe a little bit garbled. And then the child was 120. So you can imagine like nonverbal, aggressive, that kind of stuff. It from January until May, 4 months, went to 55. That's like a whole nother child because 120, you're super lost. And the closer you get to 10 is like golden. So he's now tolerant, says some words, doesn't hit himself anymore. And of course, they don't stop. And the group is really interesting. It's grown. Now there's 140 some people in there now. It's just difficult now. Like we can't have Facebook and stuff. So it's difficult to actually have groups and especially not my name. I don't have Facebook because it's all gone, but it would be nice because I think there's a lot more people just carnivore for autism. Forget about chlorine dioxide. Just talking about the diet because the kids are doing extremely well. They're healthy. They're really looking good. There's because some of the moms do labs here and there and they're, you know, their levels look really good. Yeah. And it's really the perfect ketogenic diet because it's not like filet mignon all day long. You have the chunks of fat in there. It's built in or bacon, but bacon of the kind without the nitrates and the, you know, organic, no nitrates, no, all that kind of junk in it. So that's,
yeah, diversity is important. Yeah.
I actually had one child. He was about 4 or 5 years old. Mom had 4 kids. He was the oldest. He ate 2 things, bacon and bread. I said, okay, go to Whole Foods and get the organic one without any nitrates in it and get rid of the bread. His ATEC, and again, like I said, 10 is ideal, 0 is perfect, went from like 70 to 20 something in I think 3 or 4 months. Just eating bacon, super healthy. It's fat and protein. We come from this 3 million years of our history. We come from that, like Nanook of the North, but the documentary, what did he eat? Whale, blubber, seal, and occasional salmon, whatever. Organs go to the dogs. The loin goes to the dogs and they eat all the fatty meats. And that's what really kept them so strong. Great bones, great teeth. And of course, like they said, Nanook and all his Eskimo buddies, they all had a really rough life. So they didn't have hospitals and stuff. So if they got nailed by a polar bear tooth when they were taking him down or something like that, they could die from that kind of stuff. But otherwise, they would have probably lived to be very old. And actually, one of the anthropologists, Dr. Wilhelm, I think his name was, I get it always wrong, Stephenson, but he wrote Not by Bread Alone, Fat of the Land. And he actually was the one who wrote the documentary about Nanook of the North and studied their diet and everything. He came back with the partner that he went up with after 10 years of being, I think it was 10 summers and 13 winters that he was up there, came back, went to Bellevue Hospital and did another 370 days eating like they ate with the same proportions of 70% protein and 30% fat. And they were just amazed. Cholesterol was perfect. Their blood sugar was perfect. And then, of course, that was 2007, 8, 2000. It was 1907, 1913. So we're talking about a really long time ago. And then, of course, nobody got interested in that because that would just take away the business. So bad prototype, get rid of that one. But they were studying these things. They were actually interested in health and healing back in the day.
And what a difference that was. In orientation.
Very different.
Even if you look at Weston Price and his work, studying different cultures on every continent, the indigenous folks, even like the villages in Switzerland, you know, they really prized the specific animal fats for people preparing to be parents, new mothers. They knew these were really valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is really interesting because obviously we're in the middle of diet wars right now. It's very acrimonious out there. We have other people on the summit talking about how you're going to die if you eat anything but plants. So where that is position.
Yeah, and I think it's a position. I think I actually did an interview with somebody today who's trained in Dr. Nick Gonzalez protocol. And she said he had 80 or 90 different diets. And some of them were more in the carnivore fat. And some of them were in the plants and juicing, like gerson and stuff like that. It does make sense that they're, and they did it on parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. And he was able to tell the difference in what they needed. And I do believe that because I do have some kids that don't do particularly well on that. I have one boy just right now. The mom really wanted to do carnivore. So she jumped into that group to do the carnivore. And the boy was just like flat. He was like on the couch because that's not typical. The fat gives you the energy. And he was on the couch and he was tired and run down. And it was like went for days or weeks or whatever. And then finally, I happened to see one of her posts. I'm like, wait, hold on. Let me talk to you. And so I put him like have apple, have pear, have melon and give coconut water and some Pealite, which is another, but because that's some of the other stuff. And I'm like more magnesium, more potassium. And the kid bouncing around today, playing and having a great time. I don't think he's a candidate. She'd probably want to try again. But I would do it only if she is very close to me because at the first sign that he gets lethargic, I just think it's not for him because I, like what you're saying, I don't think one diet is for everybody, but I do think some diets can help many people, especially if you stay maybe for the right amount of time. Maybe carnivore would be good for, I don't know. I don't know. Cause I follow Sean Baker, Dr. Baker is doing it. He looks fantastic. He feels fantastic. You see this guy, his workouts are incredible. And you just eat a meat and with fat on it. So I think for some people, it's absolutely the right thing to do. And then others like this boy, I really think he's going to have some food and some carbs. I don't know. Maybe he's a burner. Maybe he needs to burn. He's burning faster. I don't know. It's hard to know people unless you do like tons and tons of studies. And I think that they're even not typical studies done like that. So I do agree. Some people they feel better. I was vegan at different times because my ex would get vegan and my half sister would be vegan. And they were like, vegan. Okay. So I never felt worse in my life. But as a vegan, personally, I felt just terrible. I didn't really have, my pulse was always racing. I always felt just terrible. But I think some people, and we can talk about the blood type diet, but and I'll tell you something about blood type diet. I know maybe it sounds silly. But when I look at the blood type diet, I haven't looked at it in many years, but when I did originally look at it, the foods on the blood type diet for I'm O positive, I do better with meat. I do better with vegetables. Don't do really well with fruit. Yeah, grains, not like anything happens to me, but I don't particularly feel good. I feel bloated. So I do believe there is a little bit of truth to all of these kind of things. But you have to also, when I work with people, for example, that have multiple sclerosis or Lyme disease or something, and they say, well, I should be gluten-free, casein-free. My question to you is, what foods don't make you feel bad? Because a lot of these people, everything they eat, they get bloated, they feel bad, they have placebo. So what you, and almost, if somebody could answer that question for me, it's almost always been when they say, the only thing that really doesn't make me feel bad is when I'm doing carnivore. And one after the other, but it takes me, I'm a little bit of a hard head. So it took me a couple of years to connect the dots. Because then I was like, wait a second. So all the people that have ever told me they feel better when they're doing something and they have a chronic condition, it's been carnivore. Because otherwise people don't say, I feel better when I'm eating bowls of rice. They don't ever say that. But the people that would tell me, no, actually I feel better when it would be when I'm eating carnivore. I was like, oh, so weird. That carnivore is weird.
It makes sense because I'm not on a carnivore diet by any means. I've been vegetarian for 15 years or no, God, 25 years. God, a really long time. But my partner is carnivore. I mean, he's been doing that and he's really thrived on it. And many people in our community do. And we think of this in terms of like food filters, overlap food filters, see how they work. Take one off as you don't need it anymore. But we haven't brought this up yet in our interview, but I'd love your thoughts on the herbicides, pesticides that make our plants so toxic today the ruminant animals actually filter those out to a very large degree. So it makes sense if your gut has been shredded by herbicides and pesticides, that if you finally get a break from that, that you can actually bring down the pathogen load, take a break, stop poking the bruise.
Absolutely. And I think also when there's so much information coming into the body, it's like with taking supplements. Sometimes I see these people and they're like, I'm 90 supplements, or they come from these very expensive doctors. And they're like, I've been seeing so-and-so for 16 years or whatever, and I know better, but I'm buying all these supplements. Do I need this one and this one? I feel like a checkout counter. Like they're just seeing one supplement after another. Like, not really. Do you feel better with any? No, I feel worse than ever. You're like, okay, then let's just stop that kind of thing. So it does make sense to me that less is more, and less information in the body is more, and less having to break down all the different things. Think about it in one day. If you think about how we are as human beings and how we come from the millions of years back, and you go back in time and we're looking not gorilla-like, didn't look as cute as we are now. We were walking around, we were probably dirty and grimy and didn't shower as often as we do now. And how often did we get a bushel of berries? Or how often did we get a whole jar of cashews or a whole thing of almond butter?
Or a pound of spinach and juice every day? Oxalate, histamine, balm?
Well, we didn't, because they tasted bad. They weren't hard. So we weren't really kale. That was like a decoration for a salad bar. We didn't even actually eat those things back then. So we didn't eat them. We could eat them. We didn't do that kind of thing still. So we were just eventually with cavemen. We would kill some animals and some stuff and then walk again. Intermittent fasting, we did a lot of that kind of thing. But yeah, we were not really eating so many different things on any given day. And now, because we have these fantastic grocery stores that have everything, like I'm craving, and it's the middle of winter, fresh berries, or I'm craving, you don't live by the ocean, I'll have some salmon, you know, it's been frozen for 3 or 4 weeks. So whatever it is we want, we can get it. But that's not really typical for our bodies. It's better to eat less, because I know when I was vegetarian too, I would put 8 million different vegetables into my salad, and I was like, oh, look at all those colors.
A 70-ingredient vegan bowl, and you're like, why do I hurt afterwards? I can't stop doing that. Stop doing that.
Exactly, Sinclair. It's stuff like that. But if we can think about it, one of my dear friends, she's like that. She has like arthritis and all that. She's just beautiful and she's trim and that she's not like 1 ounce overweight at all. Loves her fruit and loves her vegetables. She's like, I can't live without them. But if maybe just try a week of carnivore. Don't say I'm going to do it the right way. She does eat meat as well, but that's like a small portion of things she eats. And you don't have to just eat meat. You can also have chicken or fish or eggs, or there's a lot of other dead stuff out there. So you could eat any kind of anything that you want. But I just think that sometimes we need to try something else. And same thing, maybe somebody's, you know, trying to do carnivore, like this little boy, for example, trying to do carnivore. It's not right for him. So he's going to be, maybe he'll have some meat, but he's also going to have some apples. He's also going to have some nuts. He's also going to have some vegetables, and he's going to have a little bit more of a wide variety. But like how many different foods on one given day? Maybe 10, not like 30. Because people that want to do, for instance, I have so many moms like, but how do I make bread? He needs bread. He needs cookies. He has cereal for breakfast every day with milk. So when you start to go back and try to fake making these
replicating the sad diet. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. We're replicating the sad diet. It's very difficult. And then you get stuck having too much, like I was telling you about the high glutamate almonds. So many people, they go keto and they go high glutamate immediately because they're using almond flour for everything.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think that's how we get sensitized to the oxalates, and you're poking the bruise with the histamine stuff. Your liver's already overloaded. Your pathogen load is increasing your histamine sensitivity. Like there's a reason why this is not working. And when I look at my diet personally, I do rely a lot on animal products to stay healthy, even as a vegetarian. And that to me says something about my health personally. But I really wanted our remaining time to talk about any factors that you feel have been overlooked in the autism community, especially for those parents listening and also for those practitioners who are trying to expand their skill set and really do want to help our children. What have we not covered that you want to make sure we impart today?
If in fact there is a practitioner listening that does treat kids with autism, chlorine dioxide has more recoveries than anything else on the planet for autism. As well as other illness, but autism has been my focus for the last, 19 years. But the last 12, when I found chlorine dioxide, changed my life. I started seeing recovery after recovery. And they want me to just be quiet about it. That's a very difficult thing to do because it's the truth. And I've seen miracles one after the other. And these children, I would hope that these doctors are working, these practitioners are working to heal the children, not just for the big money that they're getting. I really would hope so. So I do work with other people's patients. For example, if you want to keep your medical license in the United States, don't say CD. Don't talk about CD. You can just give them my email, carrierare.com. Just give them my email. And you keep working with a little supplement. You keep doing the lab testing. You keep doing everything else. I am on the other side. And you keep your hands clean and your kids recover. So every 3 months, you're doing the ATEC and you're going to zero. And that's our guide until we get the job done. For parents, go and see the Universal Answer. It's free. Just www.theuniversalanswer.com. Understand what chlorine dioxide is and what it isn't. And then you can see why it's been demonized by the media, by the trolls. And don't think that the pharmaceutical companies are far away from paying trolls. So I believe they're just pharma shills, most of them. And then some of them are just jumping on the bandwagon because that's what they do, because they're those keyboard warriors in the basement of their parents' houses. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, too. And then there's just some psychopaths out there. There's also that group, too. And some of them are, they get like crazy envious of people, and then they want to destroy that person. There's some really crazy stuff going on. And of course, there is no law for them. So if you're a real bad person, and you're harming the people that they want you to harm, there's nothing that's going to stand in the way. I saw the other day that somebody sent Fauci some hate emails and they've gone to jail for 3 or 4 years, something like this. Who didn't send Trump for those 4 years hate mail? They probably got like, you know, he probably stopped checking his email at some point. So nobody went to jail, but like one person sends Fauci some hate mail and the guy's in jail now. So there's always two sides. So whatever's going to happen to me bad, they're not going to punish the people that are harming me. Not going to happen. Because I'm going against the grain.
I think what we should be measuring is, are children getting better?
Of course. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Why would I stand here and tell the story? My life is okay. My son is not in diapers. My son is not self-injured. I'm okay. My life is okay. I don't really need to be doing this anymore. But I also can't stand by and watch those angels, now nonverbal, in pain, with diarrhea, with constipation, crying all night. And again, nonverbal. These children don't deserve this. They had a voice and now it's been taken away from them. Give it back to them. Give them back their rights. When people say, God willed this, God also gave us all the answers. So go look for them. They're there. Maybe you don't want to hear it. Maybe it doesn't jibe with you, but just do your homework. That was one of the first things that I did when I had my chlorine dioxide in 2009, activated in 2010, and I went into the internet search. Google is not a search engine, people. It is absolutely not. So don't use Google. Use UpGo, Start Page. There's a whole lot of other ones. I don't promote any of them, but definitely don't use Google. When you're looking at individual things like I did, does it get rid of virus? Yes. Opens the viral envelope and destroys virus. Kills bacteria, kills candida. It kills parasites. It takes down inflammation, neutralizes heavy metals. So any chelator, oral spray, anything you're putting in is going to pick up metals because they're already just there. They're not hanging on to anything. They're just free. So it was like the perfect thing. But I'm like, it's only $20. I knew autism would be very expensive. If I wasn't spending $4,000 or $5,000 on a treatment, it probably wasn't any good. But you know what came to me? God doesn't just love rich kids. So it can be something. And I've worked with families in 77 different countries, and I've never had a family tell me I can't get it. Never, ever have I had a family. Kuwait, Qatar, the furthest part that I can think of, they get it. They find it. There's not a problem. So, and there's sellers all over the world selling chlorine dioxide. So there's never been a problem. And I believe that's another reason why chlorine dioxide is indicated for many illnesses. What do we just come out of?
Amazing. Thank you for your work. Is there anything you'd like to end with speaking directly to the parents right now?
I am a parent and I'm not a psychopath. So what I've only done is just shared what worked. And what I see working day after day. And of course, it's not just my son got a little bit better because we're gluten-free, casein-free. This is my kid is typical. They have driver's licenses when they get to be 16. Like they're fully recovered. They've gone on with their lives. Like they picked up later on, but they picked up. So they're recovered. Recovery is possible. And of course, even if you fall short of that, whatever you get is still much better than what you have today. So if you've got a relatively high functioning kid, so I have some people that are just like, well, the kid's a little bit strange. Well, you would take a little bit strange and recover that real fast. But you have a severely autistic child. What if you can get that child communicating and sleeping through the night and having regular bowel movements and going with the family everywhere? So there's different levels of recovery, but only God knows. You have to start. So get started. There's my email. I answer all emails for free. I answer every one of my emails personally. So any questions you have, I'm always happy to send people in directions. And understand, a lot of the stuff from my YouTube channel is gone. So all those testimonies, they disappeared also. So some of these things were just posted up there and then they're gone. There's some stuff on Odyssey. There's some stuff on Brighteon.com. So it's a little bit difficult. It's more difficult to find testimonies. If anybody has any questions, I'm always open to answer them.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation, Sinclair. Really a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening. Go to detoxrejuvenation.com to find the links in the show notes to everything we covered in this episode. Please subscribe, review, and share with other humans who need this precious information. Let's help each other. Until next time, love, Sinclair.